Well, hello everybody. I am Steve Parker with Archer, and welcome to another edition of Direct Connect. I am pleased and honored and humbled and throw on other adjectives to have with me today Brent Castanetto, another of our managing partners, and we're going to spend some time chatting about and kind of recapping some of the things that have gone on in the New York SIP world over the last few months. While many of us were off enjoying the holidays and some downtime and rest and relaxation, NERC was a little busy. Got a lot of stuff submitted, finalized, thrown up to FERC, and so we're going to talk about some of that and everything else that's going on. So with that, Brent, say hello.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here. Excited to talk about the changes that are facing us in the near future with respect to NERC SIP. So there are a number of them.
All right, so let's go ahead and dive right in, and I'm going to put in a plug for EnergySec because, as you know, Archer's a member of EnergySec. I do some work over there, and I'm going to borrow their NERC SIP project tracker as notes and just kind of walk down some of the things that have been going on. So first of all, there's been some projects that have been filed with FERC for review. The big one, and maybe we'll start here, is the virtualization update. So as you're aware, Project 2016-02, yes, 2016, this has been going on for a long time. We finally were able to get to a package that industry was able to approve, and it's been submitted up to FERC, actually last July, but we haven't yet seen anything come out of FERC on that. So talk to me, Brent, about what your thoughts on that. What are you hearing? What are people saying? What do you think might happen there?
Yeah, I'm really curious. You mentioned 2016-02, and you know, eight years after we initiated this entire project, right? And now it's come full circle toward FERC approval. I don't anticipate FERC challenging much. They are going to have questions with respect to a lot of the definitions, the newly defined terms, whether that's VCA, whether that's BCA itself. I think those definitions will probably need some more flowery language crafted around them. So those could be some potential impacting changes. I think overall, you know, most of the clients and the entities that we work with have been leveraging virtualization in their corporate side and even in their control system side for a number of years now. So I'm confident that the entities are very capable. They're handling virtualization and virtualized environments in a secure manner by, you know, true segregation and network segmentation. But I think where this comes to where the rubber meets the road is when the regulators come out and start asking questions. You know, what are they looking for from a performance perspective? You know, what are the auditors going to be competent in understanding what a VCA is, what that looks like, and what it encompasses? I've had clients and partners ask me about you know, some of these new concepts of you know, the stack and how far you go with respect to ESXi hosts or where the host lives, you know, truly lives in the environment, how you identify what is the BES cyber asset or the virtual cyber asset. So, you know, there's going to be a significant churn as we initially work through this, and the regions and FERC and NERC come audit and evaluate the effectiveness of the controls that are in place. But I'm very curious to see what FERC has to say about it with certainly the defined terms and those new definitions. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I kind of concur with you to a large degree. One thing, you mentioned the definitions, and there's a few sneaky things in there that aren't necessarily virtualization related. One is they did change up under SIP 10 how the baselines were done. So they've eliminated the concept of baselines and are going more towards a focus on the security controls and really verifying the security controls for any change. It looks like TFEs are going to be eliminated. And I know I see your reaction, Brent. I know you were instrumental in your days as audit manager at WEC and actually streamlining and refining the TFE process. So how do you feel about your baby becoming irrelevant?
Vindicated. No. I'm happy. It was a silly experiment. That zero defect concept that has kind of trickled down from FERC over the years. I think everyone recognizes that that was a paperwork exercise, right? And there is very limited, if any, value in documenting the technical feasibility exceptions. Now, it did teach us some things, right? It did teach us to ensure that we have valid documentation and justification. It ensured that we understood the limitations of our systems and devices, that we recognize those limitations, and that we could affect change by either upgrading the system, moving to something different, or creating defense in depth posture around those device limitations. So it taught us a lot. And so there was some value that came out of it. But at the end of the day, I'm happy that we've moved off of that as an industry. And I think it'll help us as we progress into the future.
One last item on this one, which I think is probably the sneakiest and probably the most impactful change that was put in there. Has to do with the definition of interactive remote access. And they added a clause. So interactive remote access traditionally has been for the routable communications into an electronic security perimeter. They added a clause for situations where communication is converted to a non-routable protocol. So situations where you have a terminal server and you go over the network to a terminal server, then drop down to a non-routable serial protocol to get to an RTU or PLC or a relay, something of that nature. That's been a known loophole for a while. I know loophole is a bit derogatory, but it's been a known area of concern in the standards with a lot of controversy on interpretations. Well, now that's going to be interactive remote access and will require some protections. So have you heard any hues and cries from industry, or have they not picked up on that yet?
Not yet. I think everyone most people recognize what that, the condition that puts them in. Most entities are find themselves with devices that do that, right? Whether you're using some type of protocol converter or something that, isolates, right? And kicks off another session through the terminal connection or the non-routable connection. My concern is the entities that may not understand, well, what can I do from a protection perspective to these devices that are serially communicating? What can I do from a routable perspective to protect those connection points? And, the answer is not a lot other than true isolation, right, and segmentation. So I think there's a lot of work that has to be accomplished by industry to, A, account for these new devices, right, because now they've become fully into scope. But what do they do from a protective measure perspective? How can you put routably based control around non-routable devices? So then you look to things like system hardening and how do we do that, right? Secure Linux, SEL has some great things that they've done to harden the target, if you will, and prevent malicious code or malicious traffic from being passed over to those devices. So I'll be very curious and I'll be watching with bated breath to see how entities attack this, how they address the concern, and what the new network looks like.
It will be interesting. So let's move on. Let's move on from that one. And another one that's a tad old, but from the fall, the internal network security monitoring. This, of course, has been approved by industry. FERC had issued a NOPR back in September proposing to approve this standard. They received comments, and now we're in that period of time waiting for the final ruling. I fully expect it to be approved as is. They may ask for some modifications here and there, but I think for the most part, we're going to get what we see on this one. What are your thoughts, and are you seeing entities beginning to work on this, or are they waiting for the starter's gun to go off on the implementation plan?
In my experience, we're waiting for the gun to go off before we make a move. And I think a lot of that comes from what truly is INSM, right? Internal network monitoring. Is it inside the ESP, or is it more broadly used to accommodate the ECOMs, right? The external facing devices, and what about the PACs? So how broadly has this rule, right, this new regulation that'll come into play soon, what does that look like and how does it impact? Is it truly the BCA, the operation and control network, or is it beyond, just upstream to include the ECOMs and the PACs? Because that's a different discussion in my mind, right? Those are two different networks. So it'll be very curious where this lands at the end of the day and the applicable systems that you're going to have to that qualify for INSM.
Yeah, and we'll find out when the FERC order comes out. Probably in the fairly near future. We will see. So let's fast forward to a few things that kind of got snuck through just before Christmas. That week right before Christmas. First of all, there's
Christmas presents. Nerd Christmas.
Exactly. Merry Christmas when you're not looking. So SIP 2 version 8 modifications to the asset identification process. And this has to do with the transmission owner control centers. So we have a new definition of control center, and we have modification to the impact rating criteria, doing a couple things. One, firming up that transmission owners with SCADA control of transmission now have a control center and will have to come into compliance. The compromise was that they created a low impact tier for transmission control centers, which had not previously existed. Mm-hmm. So most of those transmission owners will fall into the low impact. Some will be medium. But the other thing is some current TOPs that are medium impact could conceivably be dropped to low. Mm-hmm. So could be some movement in the industry along those lines. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, like we've seen with generator segmentation and separation, if I had a medium plant and I can truly demonstrate that I can segment appropriately, I have a low impact plant now, right? Multiple low impact systems and facilities. So I would expect to see some of that. Entities should proceed with caution if they choose that path to drop from the medium impact to the low impact level, but they're well within their right to make that decision. I think it needs to be, if entities move forward with that, it needs to be done methodically and intelligently. I also look at the transmission owners that have operational control. There are several out there that are registered as a TO and then have agreements in place with the TOP that we will operate at your behalf, on your behalf, as needed. You have operational control at that point as a TO and should be registered as a TOP. And I know there are people that will disagree with that sentiment or statement, but those are the facts. If you have operational control and the ability to control the grid, you likely should be registered as a TOP. So I think the tiering mechanism that they put in place to allow for the low impact TOP, TOCC, is a good thing because it segments it allows application of appropriate controls based on the risk. But as you know, we're going to talk about low impact, I'm sure, next. But those controls continue to ramp up and become more intense as we move forward. But yeah, lots of change on this one. And this is one has been a point of contention for NERC and for FERC for a number of years, going back almost a decade at this point. So glad it's finally been resolved, and now we know what the rules are, and entities are going to have to get registered and potentially change registration as a result of this.
Yep, and it has been. It was 2015 when the lessons learned came out on this topic. So yeah, just shy of 10 years since it happened. And you did read my mind. I was moving to low impact next. So I want to talk about SIP 3. I'm not sure what version to talk about because there's SIP 8, which is currently in effect. SIP 9 has been approved and has an effective date. And then there's a 10 and an 11. And I think there's a 12 that's being worked on between the virtualization changes and other stuff that's happening. A little hard to keep track of things, but we know we have stuff coming. And the new stuff that just went to FERC was listed as SIP 3 version 11. Some new controls around the authentication of remote users, malicious communications related to vendor access, things of that nature, and restructuring. So what are your thoughts on how quickly this standard, SIP 3, we're at version 11. That's more than any other standard. It's been evolving quite rapidly.
I'll start with this. So
I left you speechless. I am too.
Well, I don't know where to start. Where do you begin? So when I was an auditor back in the day, I would advise entities like, look, when you look at risk more broadly across the industry, across North America, what systems and facilities fall into the low impact category? And the majority of the systems that we own and operate as an industry, guess what? They qualify as low impact. So the threat landscape is real. It's out there. We've got a broad reaching impact level when we talk about low impact. There are a lot of things that are out there. And so I knew going in as early as when they started pushing the low impact module, right, that tiered module, that they would continue to ramp controls up at a more expedited pace than the rest of the standards. And I would tell people that, and I continue to tell people that, and I want to impress upon people that are listening to this or watching this today, that trend will continue, and you're seeing it in the fact that now we're on, you know, version 11 of this standard. Those controls where we brought in the incident response, we've brought in transient cyber assets and removable media, we've brought in vendor electronic remote access, and we're looking at supply chain risk management, and all these other things are coming to fruition. And I've always said, made statements to the fact that there will one day be no such thing as low impact. You'll either call it medium light or low high. I don't know what you call it, but the criteria would be very similar to a medium impact threshold entity. And so you're seeing that happen right before your eyes. Now, it's a slow moving process, almost like a, you know, the calving of an iceberg or something like that, right? But it is happening. It's happening, and you're seeing it in real time with all of these iterations to SIP 3.
You mentioned supply chain briefly in there, and nothing big on supply chain right now, but FERC is poking around at that. One of the things that they've proposed is that perhaps utilities should actually verify the responses provided by vendors to the vendor questionnaires, which doesn't seem like an insane idea. Not sure how you would verify all of those.
Yeah, but how do you do that?
You know, taking it at face value isn't necessarily the correct answer either. But you know, supply chain continues to be an issue. Any thoughts, things you're hearing in that area?
Well, to speak to the verification piece is like, well, who do you go to get that verification? Do you go back to the vendor? No, probably not. You're looking at some type of third party risk assessment or an internal risk assessment process that you'd have to develop. So that's going to again present additional challenges, but. Yeah, we've seen over the years that the supply chain risk management piece, right? It's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of evaluation. But if we're doing it correctly, we can provide value to our industry and remove those kind of hidden traps that may exist, back doors that may exist, the risk areas from a code impact perspective on some of these devices, right? It's really being intelligent and recognizing that there is a risk from vendors, and we need to not only be aware of it, but evaluate that risk to our organization and apply the appropriate control metrics when it makes sense.
Related topic to supply chain, but a separate topic in and of itself, is cloud. Obviously, we have vendors involved in providing those cloud services, so it overlaps a bit with supply chain. But you know, specifically, cloud has its own issues. And we, of course, do have a drafting team, which is working diligently towards what may end up being very broad revisions to the standards to allow for the use of cloud services. I'm keeping a very open mind in this one. I'm not going to make any predictions because who knows where we're going to land. But what are you seeing on cloud, or what are you hearing about clouds? Other than it's winter time and there's too many of them right now, right?
It's Pandora's box, and we've already opened it, right? We've already opened it with, if we're using a Microsoft suite of products or other products in that same vein, we've opened that, right? Now, operational control happening in the cloud, I think that's still still frowned upon, right? But we have opened up the ability to leverage cloud-based tools. And when you look at it from a risk perspective, for some entities, some of these low impact, which again, the majority of systems and facilities are low impact, they may be relying on a vendor that has more capacity, capability, understanding, knowledge, and insight of threats and the threat and the vulnerability landscape to better respond on behalf of an entity. So I'm in favor of it, right? I'm in favor of leveraging cloud-based services where it makes sense, and for who it makes sense to do that for. But again, this is one where entities should proceed with caution because, as you know, FERC still has the zero defect mentality, and auditors are looking for performance-based attributes when they come do audits and evaluations. Not to mention, when they talk cloud and they talk BCSI in the cloud or even operational control capability or monitoring capability in the cloud, are those vendors being vetted for SIP 13? You know what I mean? Because it's not a traditional vendor where we're buying a box and bringing it in-house. This is a little bit different. So hopefully some of those things are connecting for folks as they're looking at cloud-based services and solutions.
Certainly not making SIP any easier. A couple of final items I want to bring up, not directly related to NERC SIP necessarily, but in the broader ecosystem of what NERC is doing, inverter-based resources are getting some attention. And of course, NERC has modified their registration criteria to lower the threshold for NERC registration for the inverter-based generating resources. Voltage levels down to 60 kV, and I think we're at 20 or 25. My memory is failing me at the moment on what the threshold is for unit capacity or nameplate. They're not targeting any SIP standards for those immediately, but I think I know your answer to this. What's the likelihood that they're going to get pulled into NERC SIP at some point?
Highly. It's a high likelihood. In fact, I was working with a potential client that's looking at doing that to get ahead of the game, to be proactive. You know, they've evaluated their effectiveness against a variety of frameworks, NIST, ISO 27001, 62443. But now they're looking, okay, well, we're interfacing, right, because we're battery storage or whatever. We're interfacing with these things as inverter-based resources. So we should probably drink some of this Kool-Aid as well because we're connecting to the grid. And I think most entities that are in that world are closely monitoring this, not only the SIP impact long term, but there's an immediate impact when we look at some of the modeling standards. The mods really come into play almost immediately for these. But again, how do you direct those entities to comply with mod standards or any NERC standards when they're not registered? And so I think that's where you're talking about those thresholds have to come down so that we can account for some of these things and some of this capacity that's now being added to the grid.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the distribution side of the grid, which is not in scope for NERC SIP, and NERC generally and FERC don't generally have jurisdiction there. But we've seen initiatives from other organizations and other parts of government trying to push for things into the distribution space, and we haven't talked about SIP 14 either. SIP 14's got some changes coming on. You talked about modeling. And the some of the transmission planning assessments that are involved in SIP 14, there's activity there. So there's no shortage of activity going on in the NERC world. And so people got to really pay attention, keep their eye on things. And there's just a lot of work to do.
Yeah, it continues to move forward, right? NERC, FERC continue to move forward with enhancing and looking for opportunities to reduce risk and strengthen controls from a requirement perspective in the energy sector. And as an end user, someone who uses the power, like, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful that we have some of these regs that allow us to keep the lights on and keep focused on the work that we get to do. So there's a lot of gratitude in my mind and heart for the people that are actually operating this equipment and actually doing the work, because it's important, right? This is important work, and I appreciate it.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly as another user of the power grid as well, and want to thank you for your time today, Brent. It's been great chatting with you and just doing a high-level review of what's going on in the world under SIP, and I look forward to a future edition. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and I hope you'll check us out in a future edition of Direct Connect. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook and Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.